one of our own on WNR.
The sound of Waterford. WLR. WLR.
In this first programme from the second series of One of Our Own, Paul Flynn talks to Catherine Foley about his life as a celebrity chef and restaurant owner. Roseanne Foley recorded and edited the series, which is produced by Ancorsacock.
This was made with funding from Commissioned Na Man and the television license fee.
Celebrity chef and author Paul Flynn, owner with his wife Maura of the Tannery Restaurant, Townhouse and Cookery School, spoke to me first about growing up in a house in the heart of Dungarvan town.
There were eight of us in the house, eight children. So that means there were more of us in the house than that. And it was pretty crammed, you know, in terms of houses are so much bigger now. I always wish my children got to see, I suppose, how we're all just stuck in one room together, or two rooms, with a boys' room, a girls' room, and then mum and dad's room, over the chemist, and it was all about running the business. But I absolutely loved growing up on the square, because it was centre of everything. But we had the most magnificent toilet because you used to overlook the square and you could see all the goings on. And
kind of like where the dentist has his surgery now.
Yeah, right beside. So 15 Grattan Square, Flynn's Chemist, and right opposite Paddy Foley. In fact, Paddy Walsh, who he was at the time, was my godfather. And they used to plonk me outside the chemist in a pram all day long, and people used to come up and feed me chocolate, apparently.
And I'd say you were a little blonde baby, were you?
Oh, I wasn't that cute at all. No, I was a little blob, I'd say, with all the chocolate. But I remember, you know, as I got older, it was just the freedom of the whole thing, and we're always playing around. And you know, Mickey Landers used to have this, he used to recycle cardboard at the time. It was just all, it wasn't opened up like it was now. There was buildings there and there was businesses there, and we used to just be all around the place climbing walls and playing soccer, and you know, down in the quay and looking at fishing boats, and just, I don't know, kind of scamping around is the only way I could describe it. But very much a free childhood. I definitely enjoyed it. I loved Dungarvan, still love Dungarvan. Yeah. And I think that's what brought me back, I suppose.
Paul's father, Michael Flynn, owned and ran Flynn's Pharmacy with his wife, May.
It was Michael Quan Flynn, and he was a real gentleman. Literally a gentleman, and very well-educated, very well-spoken. You know, he'd start reciting Shakespeare at the kitchen table, and love poetry, love literature. Went to go into the priesthood for quite a number of years, actually, until he met my mother, and he jumped over the wall at some point, and then eight children later. My mother was May, M-A-I, and she was very much a character.
And what was her maiden name?
A Power.
Were they both your parents from Dungarvan?
So my mother was from Dungarvan, and my father was from outside Kilmac Thomas, Fala, Newtown, around by Newtown, a farm in Newtown. And he had the classic, I think there was four of them. There was a farmer, a doctor, they all had these professions. My father was sent off to be a priest. And he was always very spiritual, actually. And I won't say even religious, but he was a very thoughtful man. And I was absolutely besotted by him, by both
really?
My parents. But they were very, very different people. I mean, my mother was full of crack. She loved parties. My house was absolutely full of people always. And I did get away with murder because I was the youngest. And, I used to have loads of friends over all the time. And I don't know, my father used to just stick his head in the sitting room, and he'd look in and kind of shake it or say hello or whatever, and then he'd go back down to the chemist.
The local CBS in Dungarvan is where Paul went to school.
We used to roll out of bed about 10 to 9 and then, go up to the school, and I did very, very little. I did nothing. In fact, it's really ironic. Some years ago, I was asked to give a talk to the pupils, and I couldn't help but think, if they could see me now, you know, my old teachers, because, I mean, I just didn't do anything. And I'd say, I don't know, was I troublesome? I can't really remember, but I just wasn't interested. I love English and history, hated everything else. And I, not that I couldn't wait to get out of school, because I had lovely friends. But I just, you know, I didn't apply myself. And I'm definitely not stupid, but also, I'm just not academic, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But I think when I ended up finally getting a job, I was able to prove myself, you know, and I absolutely wanted to prove myself to my father that I wasn't useless.
Paul has memories of his first Holy Communion for very specific reasons.
Money and chocolate, they're the two things that I can remember in you know, being first and foremost.
And what about a new suit? Did you get a new little mini
suit? I did, yeah. I remember, like, at one point I was wearing a polo neck for something. Like, it was a brown ensemble anyway, so it was deep in the 1970s. And I was a chubby little fella, and the polo neck didn't do me any favours whatsoever, because I remember being really tight. And there's photographs, not very flattering. And I looked like a miniature chubby Rick Astley or something, I don't know, before my time. And I don't have a whole load of photographs going back. I mean, my sisters kind of have the archives in a way, and then quite often I look back. My father loved photography as well, and actually he took loads of photographs, and they're on slides, and so we have the slides, but I haven't seen them in such a long time.
After completing his Leaving Cert in 1982, Paul had reached a point where he had to choose a career path.
I remember at the time there was very little. It was 1982, and I did, you know, we used to do aptitude tests for the ESB. That's one particular one I remember going to, and I remember if I got a job in the ESB, it's just as well I didn't, because the whole country would be in darkness. There's no two ways about it. I'd short circuit absolutely everything. But I remember not really thinking deeply about what I wanted to do with my life, but it happened by accident, absolutely. At home, the food, let's just say respectfully, wasn't brilliant. I was a guinea pig for all things 1970s, like instant mash, Angel Delight. The most used item in the kitchen was the scissors, because, you know, my mother got fed up of cooking, and I totally understand that. I mean, last of eight, and you're feeding all these kids, you know, incessantly, and you kind of go, what the hell? It's just one long, dreary conveyor belt of washing up. So I get it, but I didn't have that, you know, that sort of memory of my grandmother cooking or any of this kind of stuff. But I went on a scout trip to France when I was 14. And that was my
epiphany. Your Paulian moment.
Yeah, and I remember really vividly, because there was a welcome dinner, and I wrote about it, if not that book, maybe my other book. The welcome dinner was a chicken in tarragon cream sauce with pilaf rice. But I was blown away by the food. I was going, what the heck is this? Tarragon cream, chicken, rice. And I was like, you know, lads, give me some more of yours. And they were all going, what the hell is this, in an opposite way. They were going, we're not going to eat this. Yeah. But that was definitely a moment that really struck me. And then, so when I left school, there was a false scheme whereby, you know, an employer pays 30, I remember distinctly, £30, and then the government paid £30, and that was your wage, £60. But I got a job in Mary's, but it just so happened, this is before Carmel had Mary's, and a man called Michael Duffy owned it, and there was a chef in there called Paul McCluskey, and he trained with Paul Bocuse in France, and like really famous chefs, and he was doing beautiful classic French cookery, you know, rack of lamb. I remember the beautiful desserts, eclairs and pavlovas, and you know, and then I was blown away by the cooking because he cared. This is the thing, but more than that, I love the environment. I love the fact that it wasn't outdoors, because I'm not outdoorsy. I always used to be the last person to be picked on the team, and they always go like, who wants Flynn? You know, there's nearly t-shirts printed, and nobody wanted me really, but I'm not scarred by the experience. It's okay. But when I was in a kitchen, it was warm. There was energy in there. There was spontaneity in there. There was, you know, I loved absolutely everything about it, because I love the stress of it almost, you know, because when it comes to what we call service, you know, table of four, table of six, table of two and all that, you're busy cooking and there are expectations to cook at a high level. Well, I love the whole thing. I spent a year there.
And this is only a stone's throw from where you are now with the tannery, Mary's.
Absolutely.
It's so close.
I mean, look, over the years, myself and Maura, my wife, we looked at buying it, I'd say, three times.
Really?
And it escaped us or eluded us, or we didn't want it or whatever. So my time was up, a year had passed, and I wanted to travel, actually.
Once Paul's year was up, working in Mary's, the young 18-year-old decided to take the boat to England.
It was always the boat. There was never a plane. It was the boat. And so I went to my brother Decky in Epsom, and I think I stayed with him for 2 weeks, and I got a couple of crap jobs in horrible hotels for a year, actually. But all the time I was writing off to restaurants in London that are in the Michelin Guide. But I got a job with the Roux Brothers first. My very first job, and it was a Michelin star restaurant in Covent Garden, and it was tough. It was full of French chefs, and they were very unfriendly, and I kind of wasn't able for it. And he used to stay with my brother, and I do remember that, am I feeling sorry for myself when I say this? I don't know. But I had to sleep rough, because I missed the train twice. I had to sleep rough in Waterloo Station. And I remember thinking, this kind of isn't why I moved over to London. And nobody in the kitchen gave me, will you sleep on the floor? They just left me off. And then, so I'd sleep rough in Waterloo Station and come back into work the next day. And I thought, I don't like this environment. This isn't why I came over. So we got a job with this man called Nicola Dennis, and he had a two Michelin star restaurant in Battersea. And they were very few and far between. There was only 4 2-star restaurants in the country at the time and none in Ireland. And so I got a job as a commis chef on the lowest rung of the ladder. But what was different there is that it was a family. And there was maybe 4 chefs, 5 chefs in total, and they looked after me. And the wash-up ladies kind of, we all looked after each other. And he was a very difficult taskmaster, but he looked after us. Yeah. And there was no question that you'd be sleeping rough anywhere, because they'd make sure that you were okay. Yeah. And that was the difference. So anyway, long story short, I spent 9 years with him in 5 different restaurants. I became his head chef when I was 23. I just worked my ass off. And it was... because I wanted to go home with my head held high. And even though I didn't become a chemist, this is the truth, I made something of myself. And that was very important. Even though my parents didn't know what the hell a Michelin star was, and we weren't of that environment, even though we loved going to Whitechurch and for lovely dinners and Sunday lunches and all that kind of stuff. So we loved our food, but this was another realm.
Maura Power was the girl who caught Paul's eye. And it was love at first sight. After their first meeting in Dublin, they were together, never to part again.
It was in London met her, wasn't it?
Well, it was in Dublin when I met her. Towards, I think it was maybe 8 years there or something. And I came over on a boys' weekend to Dublin, and Maura was living in Dublin at the time. And she's actually a neighbour of the girl that my brother married. And my
she's
sister-in-law.
She's from Kilmac Thomas, is she?
Yeah, from Fuse, actually. Yeah. So my brother, and literally down the road. So Phyllis rang Maura to say, listen, Decky's brother's coming over from London. He hasn't got a clue about Dublin. Would you meet him? So she was going, she was like this. I have to meet this guy. But actually, we met and we kind of hit it off the first night. And we kind of knew. And
really?
Yeah, absolutely. And she moved over. I would say 6 months later, we did a lot of over and back, which is kind of difficult as anybody. So we just kind of took the plunge. She moved over, and I think we ended up buying a flat in Wimbledon that we didn't keep. If I kept it now, I'd be laughing so much. But we you make mistakes. We had a lovely, maybe 2 to 3 years or something in London together. Two, I'd say, before I got the call to come over to run La Stampa in Dublin. And at the time, my parents were getting older. I'd been 10 years in London. I was 28, and I kind of had enough of it, really. And I just wanted to come home. And in retrospect, I would have liked to do a little bit more traveling, maybe New York or somewhere like that. But I didn't, and that's the way it goes. And I got this really great job in a fantastic restaurant. It was very famous at the time. I mean, all the celebrities in Dawson Street, La Stampa. Yeah, and it was an institution. So I ran that for 4 years. I was
and did Maura come with you?
She came with me.
Were you married?
We moved home and got married within, 2 months or 3 months of all of that. And we got married at Christmas 1993. So we're 30 years married. And so because I came back to Ireland in September, it just so happened that the previous chef walked out with all the staff. And we had to start with hardly anybody. And it was just like work, Christmas. And then the wedding was on the 27th. And like... I think I snuck off the bed. She still gets mad and I don't blame her. Yeah. And I'm not a party pooper. I'm pretty good at a party. But the one party that really mattered was the wedding. And there's me. Yeah. I mean, look, it kind of, if we could do it again, I suppose I'd like to do something smaller. But look, it kind of doesn't matter now because 30 years later, we're still together.
Paul was working hard in La Stampa restaurant in Dublin. His talent and determination going from strength to strength.
Well, one thing I was absolutely sure of is that I didn't want to go down the route of a Michelin star because I saw how hard it was. And it's hard to get and it's hard to maintain. and it kind of dominates your life, and I wanted a freer life than that. Now, I was very sure about that. And even the move of going to La Stampa, it was very, you know, instead of doing maybe 70 people with 16 chefs that we did in Chez Nico, we had like seven chefs doing 300 people or 250. It was completely different. So consequently, I had to change the food and simplify the food. Instead of doing something really fancy, I was doing sausages and mash and onion gravy and roast duck and all these kind of things. But I was discovering what I wanted. It was my first time being my own boss. And I really wasn't sure could I be my own boss. But in the first year, we won Best Restaurant in Ireland. And I just said that we could, you know, we're going in the right direction. But actually, in La Stampa, there was a lot of pressure to make money. And consequently, you know, it was all about money, 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 as opposed to, and the food was kind of going downhill despite my best efforts, you know, because everything was kind of, you need to buy cheaper stuff and cheaper stuff. And so I never actually, to answer your question, I never wanted to be an owner. In fact, we were looking, myself and Maura were looking at traveling the world. We'd never done it. By now, I because it was a good job in La Stampa, I had a bit of money, and we were really, really close to doing it. Except I came home to Dungarvan to a friend's wedding, great crack, dancing in the Park Hotel. I remember Jack Flanagan coming over to me, dancing. And this is my first opportunity to buy Mary's, I remember. He said, would you like to, you know, he was making a pitch while we were dancing on the dance floor. I was thinking, how, you know, that's cheeky. But anyway, we had such a good weekend, and it was beautiful weather, and Dungarvan was looking great, and we were really happy. And we kind of thought, will we have a look? So we looked at Mary's, there was another really big building opposite Mary's that we really, really came close to buying.
And this is the tannery.
No, this is Maloney's Stores, like that really big building. Now, in retrospect, I certainly didn't have the money for it, but we would have figured it out. Anyway, saw the tannery and kind of fell in love with the building. My grandfather used to work in that building on the floor where the restaurant is now. That was his station for all his life. There was a bit of a definitely heart over head decision because, I mean,
and
when we were looking,
it had closed as a tannery, but it hadn't been used since.
No.
So the smells, the equipment, the machinery was...
That was all cleared out, but anyway, it was very much a factory. So because it was a factory, I kind of liked the look of it. I liked the industrial look. I wanted to do something modern. But I mean, I always say if you go into Dragon's Den, if we went into Dragon's Den, myself and Maura, and said, okay, we want to open up a restaurant in a country town that's reasonably inaccessible. I mean, there was no motorway from Dublin Remmer at the time. There was derelict cottages opposite us. There was a derelict factory behind us. There was hoarding beside us. There was no street lighting. Mm-hmm. I mean, they go, you're off your rocker. Yeah. And I think I'll put all my life savings into renovating the building. Which is what we did.
And you had no greenway then. All those old buildings down along the harbour, they weren't kind of apartments and they hadn't been opened up. It was still a big garage.
They were being done at the same time. Yeah, it was all that work was happening. But I mean, the potential for the town was always there. But as you know, we opened up and we used to be busy for maybe 2 months of the year. I mean, Saturday night was always busy, but one night of the week wouldn't keep you going. Mm. But overall, I would definitely say that it was the quietest restaurant I've ever worked in.
In those early days, Paul and Maura realised they would need to diversify if they wanted to keep the business going.
Sometimes you need a bit of luck in your career, your life. A woman called Patsy Murphy.
Oh,
she was the editor
from
the Irish Times, right? Yeah. So her daughter was in Ring. And Dennis Luby from just Clonae, he was the architect of the building, and also our friend. He brought Patsy in for dinner with no ulterior motive, really, but she got talking to me, and I can talk. And she just said, would you write an article for the Irish Times? And I said, about what? I'd never written about anything in my life. And she said, just about your life down here. So what I did, and I felt really kind of determined once I thought about it, I was writing about a country perspective. You know the Irish Times, it's very much about Dublin. And my very first articles is still actually hanging in Eunice's front hallway because it was Edmund's 40th birthday party, which is in a shed, and there was a disco and there was hay bales everywhere. And then Eunice, of course, cooked beautiful food. And I wrote about that.
This is Eunice...
Power.
Power,
She just has one name now. You know when you get really famous, you describe people with just one... She doesn't need another name. Yeah. But I wrote about that, and then Patsy asked me to do you know, a piece every 3 weeks.
Patsy, amazing, because she got me...
Did you know her?
Oh, I did, and you were well. And she got me doing the social column, you know, on the town. So she was an interesting woman, wasn't she?
She was
exciting, and she had ideas, and she had kind of passion and creativity.
Yeah.
But anyway, I digress.
No,
go
but you're,
on.
You're so right, and I think he was a bit of luck that she came across. I came across her that night. I did maybe 4 or 5 articles, but these were big articles for the Times, and so anyway, but after about a year of me writing, she came down. The Irish Times were bringing out their magazine. And she asked me to be the food writer. So this is a weekly column. I learned over the period, you know, from the beginning, I learned the value of PR in terms of keeping our business afloat. It was really important because what it did, those articles brought people from Dublin down to Dungarvan. And if we didn't, I mean, the locals were supporting us, absolutely. But however, Dungarvan is a small town and there's only so much they can come into you. But suddenly we had trickles of people coming in because of the writing. And then when I started writing on a weekly basis, then the trickles became bigger. And so it was a big part of our survival. We're 27 years in business now. And I would absolutely say without the writing that we wouldn't be in business. But from that as well came the first book. Then from the first book came the first TV series. And now there's 5 books and 5 TV series. And that's kind of how it happened. And it's not that I love the writing. And it's not that I do it for, it's very much about getting the name out there. But having a book is actually like having a legacy. It's a lovely thing, really. And then the TV, it's not that you get paid an awful lot of money. It's not that at all. First of all, it's exciting if you do a project that you really, really like. You know, quite often they get repeated. So people do think you're on telly all the time. And the Today Show, I've been on that for 12 years. And once about every 10 days or 2 weeks or something like that. So all of that is about keeping the business going. It's not about me being famous. Hey, can I get in the VIP area? I'll give you an example of how you need to push yourself. Duina Allen, who has always been really helpful. So way back in the day, I would say 25 years ago, she wanted to bring students to the restaurant. You know, they'd be touring around the place in a bus and she'd probably feed them and give them a bowl of soup and whatever. So we did that. And then I remember we have an upstairs downstairs situation where the kitchen's downstairs and she came over and you don't say no to Duina. She said, now go upstairs and tell them all about yourself. And I was absolutely quaking. I was going, what the hell? This wasn't in the agreement at all. She really sprung it on me. And I do remember just going up and talking to them. And my
this
legs
was
shaking,
before television.
Before anything. Mm. And I remember totally shaking about public speaking and being worried about the whole thing. But what it did teach me is that even though I hated it every time and I was relieved when it was over, it got easier every time I did it because I was used to it. And it taught me that you have to put yourself out of your comfort zone to do something that's good for you sometimes. Yeah. And that was definitely good for me because you just become stronger at it. Yeah. And you don't, you lose your inhibitions and all of a sudden you don't think twice about it.
Yeah, that's
so I
great.
Really credit Duina with that. It's,
really,
so it's good to have a strong woman, just to do what you're told.
Maura and Paul have always worked together as a team. So I wondered what they each bring to the business end of the partnership. I asked him if they are alike.
Are you alike, Paul, yourself and Maura?
No. She's way smarter than I am. She is the businesswoman. She's the front of house. She has taken on, you know, she works way harder than I do now because, I mean, I have a head chef now. And, you know, she's always in the office. If she's not in the office, you know, sorting out wages, she's sorting out bookings. And then she'll come in and she'll do, you know, she'll do the pass where she's carrying plates and she'll meet and greet people. If there's complaints, she'll deal with complaints. Whereas I run away. I mean, we've had, you know, anytime there's sort of an issue, like, you know, accountancy-wise, I go for a walk in Clonay.
I'm amazed, though, that you met that night. It was kind of a blind date in Dublin.
And
you hit it off straight away and you stayed together. I think that's so lovely. That's so romantic.
It is romantic. It is.
Yeah.
And, anyway, it kind of happens. And there was a bit of an old thunderbolt moment for both of us,
wow.
I think. And there's been lots of highs and lows. The crash was really, we bought a building right before, you know, in
2008.
So we bought, the cookery school in 2007. And literally a month later, it was worth 2/3 less, if not 3/4 less. And you're kind of going, you know, what are we going to do? Whereas you have, you know, because the thing about success, because after the first maybe 3 years, we were in a role and we were successful and things were going well. Then we put on the first set of rooms. We have two townhouses on Church Street, and we got the first one, and it made a lot of financial sense. And then the price of everything was going up, you know, all the property was starting to go crazy, but also our confidence was high, because we were kind of going, well, we can make it work.
And
we
need confidence to make decisions like that, to go for things, take risks, don't you?
Mm. Yeah, but and it was definitely the most difficult thing we ever did, because literally you're left with kind of almost nothing after, you know, 2 months before you've made this massive punt. Mm. So you have to be strong and have to stay together to kind of face all that kind of stuff. And there actually was very hairy moments, but you know, we're definitely in a better place now. But there was a number of years. You have to keep a brave face as well.
As a final question, I asked Paul if all the awards which the restaurant and the books have won are that important.
The awards are key. Not in themselves, because I think in 2013 we won Best Restaurant in Ireland, and you know what, that's lovely. Whether we were or not at the time, I don't know, but it certainly brings attention. I mean, all of this, but actually it brings attention, but it also brings expectations. The more people say that you are really good at what you do, the more people they come down and they expect to be blown away. And in fact, our food is quite simple, and it's getting simpler over the years in a way, and it's not bells and whistles and smoke and whatever is available with food now. It is just something that I really feel strongly about, that more than anything else, we are a local restaurant that happens to have people traveling to us. Because if you don't have the locals behind you, you're not going to last. You need their support, and we've had their support all the years. And now there's people who comes into us, they were children, I must be getting old, but I mean, they were children, now they're coming in with their own children. We see this generational thing, which is really lovely.
27 years, it's amazing.
I used to be blonde and beautiful.
Listen, thanks a million, Paul.
Thanks, Catherine. Thank you very much.
This was made with funding from Commissioner Man and the television license fee.